Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
Hey, and good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and I hope you can hear me. I've been battling here, folks, been battling this whole last week, but I think we're all good to go, and welcome to another week of American Tennis. Again, this is Coach Chuck Creasy, and every week, we're on American Tennis at noon on Wednesday, and we're here to talk about the latest tennis issues, sometimes sports political issues, sometimes just how to hit forehands and backhands. But every week, American Tennis is brought to you by the UR Tennis Network. You can call in area code 714-583-6853 if you would like to be on the show. I am Coach Chuck Creasy. I wanted to mention to you that J.P. Weber, every Tuesday at noon, is the We Coach Tennis program on Blog Talk Radio. And also Lisa Stone has her Parenting Aces program at noon on Mondays. Jason Haynes will have his collegiate program 2 o'clock Eastern Time on your Tennis Network. We bring you a large array of different things, and every show that we have can be found at chuckcreasy.net. Chuckcreasy.net, just clog on American, click on, excuse me, American Tennis Radio, and you can get every show that I've had for the past 2.5 years. Also, I wanted to remind you that at chuckcreasy.net you can find my books, my writings, and camps and those things that you may find interesting. Folks, I have a fantastic guest today, and I'm going to try to let him do most of the talking, and I'm just going to ask some questions. If you will, bear with us and get through my part of it here today. You're in for a great treat. Our guest, and I'll see if he's online. Coach DeAndre, are you on the line?
I'm on the line, Chuck, and you sound terrible.
I'm making it, man. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak, you know. It's one of those deals. But, you know, I really, really, really appreciate you coming on. And I've been wanting to have you on for quite some time. I had to go back and dig through the archives, Bill, and find out a lot of the stuff about you. But I think that the best introduction I have ever had one time, instead of going up and reading all the fluff, was this guy just went up and just says, Coach Creasy says the way it is, and he's my friend. And I'm going to start with that, but I will read some of the fluff here, Coach. But and I call you Coach still because
you sure
part
can.
Of the information, part of the information comes from the coaching perspective, but a lot of it is going to you're going to talk about comes from the administrative perspective. We have so much going on in college athletics right now, and let me just start out by saying, Bill, it was 30 years at Clemson. I can't remember, it was 1984 when you, or 80, it was earlier than that. When was your first year at Clemson? Was 80?
Actually, 83 was the first year I came, Chuck.
You guys had unbelievable football success during those years, the golden years of Coach Danny Ford, and I think that every year there are 6 or 7 ACC championships, and you were definitely around greatness. But you went to Indiana State, played football. Also, you got to know the great coach, Dwayne Clee. And is Coach Clee
yes, sir.
Still alive? He is.
You know,
talk
I don't
about
believe,
him a second.
Dwayne was actually, I took several courses from him. He taught in the physical education department, took a course on leadership, and actually took a tennis course under him as well. And Dwayne was a first-class individual, always had great teams year in and year out, was just a gentleman, an unbelievable teacher of the game, and just one of Indiana State's finest individuals that I've ever had as a professor or as a person.
Folks, I got to tell you about Coach Dwayne Clee. I came very close to getting to go to Indiana State. Bill, he came and watched me play in high school. And for those of you tennis folks out there, you'll love this. He sat through the whole match. I won a match 10-8, 3-6, 20-18. And it got written up the next day in the paper. 20-18, we didn't play tiebreakers. That might have been an Indiana schoolboy record that'll never be broke. Most games ever in the history of a high school tennis match. Anybody out there can break that. I want to hear about it. But Coach Clee was one of the greatest individuals. He epitomized what education is through sports. Bill, I'm going to just say a few more things. But, folks, Bill was a senior associate athletic director at Clemson after his coaching days, but they brought him in particularly to set up what they called Vickery Hall, which was the place where all the student-athletes went to get help for their academics and, might I say, many other aspects of their life. And I wanted to say, Bill, I refer to you always as the guy that you went to when you needed to figure something out at every level. And you were also the guy that had to do so many of the dirty work jobs around the campus, whether it was to calling parents about their youngster in trouble, sickness, illnesses, death sometimes. Everybody went to Bill DeAndre because he was the guy that could deliver it in the right way and straightforward, and everybody, you know, people trusted you. But, Bill, I'm leaving out a lot of your 2.5-page resume here. I just wanted to say you were from Pennsylvania, where all the great players were in those times, so you have to have football and understanding of college athletics and athletics in your blood. The last thing is you ended up having to raise 21 – oh, golly, it's much more than that. That was only in one of your last years, $21 million to $25 million for scholarships. And, gosh, we ought to ask you about how it was to do that. So with all that, Bill, I hope I got enough fluff. We'll cram a few more in there, a little bit more in there. But you've seen every aspect of college athletics. You know, what would you say is the most, I don't know, the most extreme things you've seen change? And what should we look for coming down the road? Because I want to ask you about this autonomy stuff, too, later.
Right. Well, I think, Chuck, you know, being there for 33 years or 30-some years, I think there's a lot of things that have changed. And you know, let's start really kind of with recruiting. Back in the 80s when I was on Coach Ford's staff, you know, we did some junior recruiting. We identified the juniors. But today, I think in all sports, whether it's Olympic sports or whether it's the two major sports, people are being identified a lot earlier in their careers. Ninth grade, eighth grade, people are being contacted either through a questionnaire or some interest and all that. You certainly can't contact them that early by NCAA rules, but they are aware of it. And I think with the instruments that we have today and social media and all the access that we have, very few people are falling through the cracks. I think that is a big thing. I also think that you're getting a better academic student simply because of the NCAA has ratcheted up the requirements to participate in Division I athletics. And you're also getting a better athlete, somebody who has been watching the game, who understands the game, may pick out a particular player and follow him and whatnot. So I think that's certainly one of the things. I think also that, you know, college athletics has kind of become a year-round commitment. We used to get summers off to go work or whatever. Now most of our student-athletes, and not just at Clemson, but I think at most institutions, are there during the summer. They're in the weight room. They're working on their individual skills. And it really is, in some aspects, it is a commitment somewhat like a job. And so I think those are definitely big things. And then with football, certainly the philosophy of the game has changed. It's everybody is running the spread offense. They're spreading the field. They're getting a quarterback that has the capability of running the ball and throwing the ball, which is hard to defend. And that whole philosophy of two tight ends and high formation and grind it out has changed the game. I mean, you're looking at scores where, you know, Texas, TCU, yeah, and Baylor was, what, 68-65?
That's ridiculous.
Like a basketball score, yeah. So I think that, I think a lot of things have evolved, and, it's certainly making a difference. And also I would say this. I would say there are some limitations on the number of hours a student can participate, which is 20 hours a week. And it might be that there are some difficulties with coaches who, you know, can't outwork people when you limit that 20 hours. And somebody might need more work, you know. But we do have to find a balance because it is about getting your degree. It is about, you know, balancing athletics with academics. And I think the NCAA has done a good job with, you know, staying on the mission that, you know, all of this athletic competition and is really about graduation.
You bring up so many points, and I want to ask, in a couple categories, but anybody that listens to American Tennis Radio here, with our program, we always start out by saying you have a duty to stand up and speak out, and all that it takes for evil to prosper, for good men to do nothing, that the quote from Edmund Burke. But everybody listens to me knows that I say it the way it is. Now, there's a couple things I want to question about. Yeah, it's been really good. The I believe on the outside, the NCAA has really taken a stand for academics, and it has worked to a great, great extent. Nobody knows better than you with the academic help centers and everything like that. We talk about tennis usually on the radio. The 20-hour work week has all but pulverized college tennis, Bill. In the 1980s, we had 39 USA-born players that made top 100 in the world. Today we have one. We have John Isner. They go to college. They're even saying that college is a waste of time because if you want your game dumbed down, you go to college. You don't get to practice. And I was with a group of coaches 2 weeks ago. We were talking about this, and I asked, in the music department, do they ever tell a band member that you can only practice 20 hours a week? Do they tell the guy in the science lab? Do they tell the piano player you can only practice 20 hours a week? Talk to about the heart of that. I'm not saying it didn't have its good parts, but talk to the heart of that legislation and why they came down so heavy on us.
Well, I think one of the reasons, if you look at our national graduation rates maybe 10, 15 years ago, particularly in the sports of basketball and football, they were terrible. And I'm not sure that they associated that with the time and effort that they're putting in to athletics. But I do think that the NCAA probably heard from some of the student athletes that, you know, we practice all the time, we travel all the time. I mean, there has to be a balance. But I also will say that in some of the individual sports like golf and tennis, even baseball where you have pitchers, we have a lot of our kids that, you know, they go to practice, but they also work on their own with regard to their skills. I mean, I see basketball players a lot of times who come over to the gym and are shooting free throws on their own. So I think a little bit of ownership by the student-athlete to improve himself, you know, the 20 hours is kind of a team concept thing that you can't work more than that. But I think individuals who really want to be successful are willing to work and kind of fine-tune their skills.
You know, I agree with you completely. I mean, I work at the Citadel. People are more than compliant. They're committed, inspired. It's a fantastic arena of hungry people who are trying to better their lives. And I have to preach constantly that compliance will never win championships. You must go past the level of just compliance. We have plenty of time with 20 hours. That's not the point. The point, Bill, I believe, is the fact that they mandate or they legislated our sport to dumb it down. We've never had problem in tennis with academics, ever. Most tennis players are great students. Most golfers are great students. Most of this may have been done for football or basketball. Some of it may be done for window dressing. But the point being is that in 1990, 91, a lot of coaches said, well, we can't outwork people. Let's go get international athletes. And they did. And it changed the whole playing field for tennis. We no longer had many, especially on the man's side, the men's side. Although, Bill, this is an important thing, too. On the women's side, over 65% of our money now is going to international women. Title IX was not set up to protect women from other countries. However, it really has ended up doing that, and it is crushing the men's side of this thing. So is this just a good, very, I always call it a very good law, very poorly implemented?
I'll go back to your first point. I do think that probably the major sports, football and basketball, and maybe even women's basketball, probably led the charge to make some of those changes with the 20 hours. I do agree with you. I've been here a long time. As you know, Nancy Harris has been our women's coach, and I think we have only one American on our team. Most of them are all international and have been international. And, of course, she's been very successful with that. And I think our tennis coach here, Chuck McEwen, has got two international kids on his team right now. And I guess, Chuck, you would know better than I that the format apparently in the international market over there with tennis, simply because they don't have football and basketball and other sports, it appears to me that those people are ahead of the game when they come here. You know, it's kind of like what football does when they have a student athlete that comes in January. He doesn't even finish his senior year, although he graduates in December. He enrolls in Clemson in January, and you know, he has a spring practice under his belt, and he enters his true freshman year in August. You know, with probably 20 hours under his belt, and a spring practice under his belt. So, I think that the international, I don't know, you have to tell me, they just seem to be ahead of the game.
Well, the answer there is ahead of the game is an understatement. Most of them have played 30 or 40 professional tournaments. Our kids are still weaning themselves off of a overly regulated, too many hoops to jump through system that's set up by our programs over here that dumbs kids down and keeps them in a container. Over in
right.
other countries, yeah, they do play lots of professional events, and they come over here. To be fair, the coaches, you can't blame the coaches to some extent, but it has, just like outsourcing of our jobs, for example, a textile industry in South Carolina has crushed our industry to a large extent, but
correct.
They've been able to reinvent themselves. We are yet to reinvent ourselves in college tennis, as it's really disheartening as Bob Bill, top 50, 60 kids in the country get picked up by the Clemsons and the Georgias,
yeah.
the Floridas. From
yeah.
70 on down, have to compete against every other country in the world.
Yeah.
And therefore,
my experience, Chuck, with international students, not that this is a that it gives me heartburn, but what happens is they get their degree and they go back to their country, and we never really. You know, they don't become alumnus. They don't give back. And, you know, I guess that's, you know, we're willing to do that. But, you know, it seems like the other sports, you know, kids get involved in a career. They come back and help our student athletes, you know, with interviewing techniques. You know, job opportunities and whatnot, but we tend to lose those people as part of your institution.
Right. And again, I think that the regulation is there has to be, like, the freedom that we have in this country, the entrepreneurial energy and the freedom has to be cut loose, but somehow it has to have a steering wheel on it. And I think
Correct.
That's the balance. If you have too much regulation, you cripple the good people from their energy. If you have none, the people are going to cheat. I always say rules or regulations never keep a bad person from breaking rules. It only stimulates their level of deviance. However, too many rules paralyze a good person from working hard in this example. So I want to move on from the 20-hour thing a little bit, Bill. But
pardon me,
Bill, go ahead.
I'm not. You said, what do we want from the 20 hours?
Well, I want to. You know, I was told that it was educational driven, and let me tell you a way of looking at it. Now, I want to move on because I got so many important questions I want to ask you about this autonomy and some other things. But 20-hour rule, when it was implemented, I asked our commissioner, I said, is this for academic reasons? And he said, yes, of course. And I said, well, why don't we rework it in reverse? Why don't you, if a team has over a 3.0 grade point average, let them do whatever, anything they want and reward them. If they don't, if they have 2.9999, hold them to the letter of the rules. That way you're creating incentive to be excellent, not dumbing down the standard. I never understood why we don't do that. And recently, with all the foreign players in the United States, Coach J.P. Weber, who does the We Coach Tennis program, Bill, he said to the USTA, why don't you guys reward the coaches who play with Americans? We don't want more regulation that just says you can't have foreign players. But if somebody's winning with six Americans, USTA, come in and give them a bonus or come in and give them something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
well, I think
reward
there's merit
them.
To that. Yeah.
You know,
I think there's,
I mean,
there's merit to that. I mean, not, you know, I think all institutions, and I, you know, we talk about Vickery Hall, and certainly it was utilized more by the at-risk student, but we also had student athletes who wanted to maintain a 3.0 or even higher than that to get into law school or med school, physical therapy school. So they used the tutoring and the academic support for that. I look back at the teams of tennis and golf and rowing and whatnot, soccer even, year in and year out, those team GPAs are well over a 3.0.
Right,
and those student athletes, you know, they've taken ownership in their education, and what you try to do with those at-risk kids is to get them to buy in, to develop ownership, to take responsibility, so you don't have to kind of check on their classes and make sure they turn their paper in and follow up on them and kind of babysit them. What you hope that they gravitate to become independent learners.
Right, exactly.
So,
well, that would be ideal, is when people go from being compliant to being committed to being inspired. That's what we're looking for. Bill,
right.
I've got to go to commercial in about 3 minutes, but
hey,
let me ask
hey
you
Chuck,
this.
I may hit a bad spot here. I'm actually driving. I may hit a bad spot here, Chuck. I may have to call you back.
Okay, if you beep out, call me back. I'll go to commercial when you beep out. Bill, let me ask you this real quick.
Sure.
You always had to do the dirty work jobs. I was in your office one time. You had to call a mother and tell her that the youngster had been dismissed from school, I think. You also used to have to intervene when somebody was maybe arrested. You also had to call and tell people when youngsters went into hospital. What was your toughest job about your position that you can remember? What was the hardest thing you as a do-it-all in administration would do?
Well, Chuck, I think the toughest job that I can remember is we've lost some student-athletes. I know that we had a player named Brandon Rouse that actually died at the Astro Theater. He had a heart attack, and they did autopsy, and he had some smaller capillaries going to his heart and whatnot. I think those are the most difficult things when you've got to call a parent. And
you were the one that had to call
them.
A parent. You were the one that had to call a parent.
Yeah.
Oh my God!
I think those
how
are
would
the
you?
Tough things.
How would you even start to do that? What'd you do?
Well, what you do is you call them and you ask them to call you back, so they make sure that they're, you know, this is not some kind of a prank call, so that, you know, they call.
Right.
And usually you have, you know, we usually had somebody from student affairs there as well, and of course Bobby Robinson was the athletic director at that time, and you know, you get all those people together and get them on the speakerphone and give them the contact information. I mean, those are very, very difficult situations. And, you know, I believe Tommy West was the coach at that time. I believe he was at that meeting as well. So, You know, there's nothing easy about that.
It really is unbelievable. Some of the things that you have to do when you're working with a group of so many hundreds of people, 18 to 22 years old. And you said something earlier. I'm going to keep you on here a second. You said something earlier about giving them, allowing them to give their opinions and their standards. Now, they're at 18 to 22 years old. Why are we empowering our athletes so much right now with all of the opportunities, but not all the responsibility or consequences? That's a broad question.
Yeah, it is. And I think really, Chuck, to be honest with you, there is so much money involved in big time athletics right now that, you know, it's doing a lot of things to change institutions. It's, you know, changing the NCAA and all that.
We had a great
coach. I think some of those things are driven, you know, are driving some of the changes. I mean, these Big Five conferences are going to apparently have the latitude to do whatever you want to do at your institution, you know. I'm personally, in my opinion, I'm for providing some of those major sports that are raising millions of dollars to an institution. I'm for providing those people a little bit more financial support, because a lot of those kids come from indigent homes, but I'm not for paying them as employees. And I think if we do that, then we're going to lose what college athletics is all about, and that is to get a degree. And right now, student athletes, if you're on full scholarship, you can have opportunity to get Pell Grant, which a lot of our football and basketball players are on, which is about almost $5,500 a year. They have now, the NCAA provides each institution with about $80,000 that is earmarked toward the Student Athlete Opportunity Fund, which gives you a lot of latitude. You can fly somebody home if there's a death in the family. They can have dental work done. They can go to a doctor, or if they have dermatology problems. I mean, it just gives you an opportunity where you don't have to work as a coach to kind of get some dentist to do something for you on the side. So the money is pouring in. TV money and you know, college football and basketball, they're making a lot of decisions that affect you, Chuck Creasy, as a tennis coach.
Without a doubt, and that's what I was getting to. When we come back, I want to make sure we talk about this this autonomy that they talk about so much. Really, it's five conferences. It's the ACC, the SEC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and the Pac-10. And those 65
Correct.
Teams or so really are the tail that's wagging the whole dog. Now, it's a big tail, but it's wagging dog of college.
And I also think you're going to see some of these institutions that are trying to go to Division I football, I think they're going to be in a precarious situation. And I think you're going to see some schools like UAB drop football.
UAB, Alabama, Birmingham. What did they figure out that the others are going to figure out, Bill? I lost Bill here for a minute, which I did. I'm going to go to commercial until he comes back in. This coach, Chuck Creasy, and what a great conversation with Mr. Bill DeAndre, who has a lot of insights and many things.
Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis radio show. In my 30 years' experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
Chuck Creasy and talking about making them in America, American tennis. And we have Coach Bill DeAndre, Mr. Bill DeAndre, who's done just about everything there is to do at Clemson University in the past 34 years. And he has a really good insight about the bigger perspective of what's going on in American college athletes, which right now, to be frank, folks, we are under a civil war going on in American college tennis. And the pathetic thing that happened this past week at the ITA convention, and we will be speaking about it for many, many weeks coming up. At the ITA convention, they ramrodded, bullied, pushed their way forward to, once again, for the fourth time, pushing forward, whether you want to call it the Bullwinkle system, the NOAAD system, the abbreviated system, the non-educational entertainment system, but they pushed themselves forward to doing what they want to do. Now, the unbelievable part of this is really, you know, there's just on so many fronts how wrong this is to as an American, as a American college player, for the coaches who are out there trying to make their livelihood. A selected group of coaches, handpicked, not elected, by the way, handpicked, have gone forward and pushed their way forward. And a lot of it, I'm trying to tie it in with Bill when I get him back on the line here, is tied in with the autonomy movement that has to do with the five college sports or the five college conferences wanting their own way, basically, and saying we're going to pay athletes. And if once they do this, there will be a great, great divide between the haves and the have-nots. More than ever before, you will have your educational institutions and you will have your entertainment institutions. The same thing is true in tennis. They have pushed forward the agenda that it is a their whole reason that they're doing the shortened format, the Bullwinkle system, the abbreviated system, the NOAAD system, whatever you want to call it, but the entertainment system. They've pushed this forward for one reason, one reason only, to protect those top programs who are going to be able to get on their SEC network or the ACC network, and these 65 teams will be protected. In the meantime, the tail will be wagging the dog, and those other 400 or 500 teams that will also be out there will have no chance of being on television at all, are going to have their sport regulated to basically an after-school activity. And this is tragic. What they done was bad enough, but how they did it was just one of the worst uses of power that I've ever seen. And they didn't ever got the coaches united. They came out with a statement, said, we were united, we were unanimous. They had eight that abstained. One of the abstaining coaches told me the other day that when he abstained, he got bullied by one of the heads to tell him, you're not a team player. And this is beyond belief. We're going to talk about this over and over in the next coming weeks. We're going to have some articles written. But there's very simple solutions to this. Whether or not you agree or disagree with NOAAD scoring, or whether what is right, what is wrong with the scoring system, we must have a democratic process and at least allow the coaches to feel that they have a say-so. An unjust law is no law at all. St. Augustine said this. An unjust law is no law at all. And the way that they have done this, the ITA should be ashamed of themselves. They should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. It's a definite abuse of their power or non-power. The point needs to be made that they could have come up with a simple solution of, number one, if they wanted a TV format, let's have a TV format. No one would have cared if they did a hokey pokey show for TV. The rest of the people could stay with an educational format, traditional tennis scoring, and teaching kids how to maneuver through the many, many ups and downs of the chessboard that is the game of tennis. It could have had a TV format. Those teams can take their ball and go play somewhere else if they want to. If they want to do that, do not force the other teams to do what they are forcing everybody to do. It's a directive by the ITA, but really it is a directive by the USTA, which is completely wrong. The USTA has no right to tell NCAA teams what to do, just as the NCAA cannot come back and say, USTA, we want you to do this. With all of the wonderful people in that organization, the bureaucracy is moving in the wrong direction. This bureaucracy, which has tremendous, tremendous power, needs to do right things instead of just trying to push forward an agenda or do things right. They need to do right things. This directive was pushed to the ITA. The ITA, and I do not know the specifics, folks, but it is said that there was incentives from the USTA to the ITA. This is hearsay. I do not know the specifics exactly. Right? But they are basically a lobbyist group that are telling the ITA what to do. The ITA is a coaching association. They are no better than maybe a union where you have to pay dues. At the worst, they are just a coaching association, or at the worst, they're a union association that tries to push the direction of college tennis. At the very best, as they were when they started the ITCA, Intercollegiate Tennis Coaches Association, they were there for coaches to learn many, many things, from educational aspects of the game to being unified and coming together with many great causes. They are a volunteer organization, and now they have driven a stake right between the morale and the unity of our collegiate tennis program. We now have a great divide. The divide has been caused, and they're saying that you must take this poison. We don't care whether you like it or not. You must take it. And this is just absurd with the way that they've done it. But in the thing that they're doing, it will deteriorate the learning aspects of many of our players. Ask any of the players out there. I've told them many, many times, ask the players what they want to play. None of them want to play NOAAD scoring. Players absolutely hate it. The majority of coaches hate it. Only those who want immediate parity and do not want to have to work extra hours to get their players strong enough, tough enough, fit enough to endure the top levels of tennis have been for this. It's so upsetting to see immediate parity based on anything except forehands and backhands and serves. What do you do? What do we do? What the most important thing I always tell coaches is you must take care of your circle of influence that is right around you. Your circle of influence are those people that are right around you. This is your team. So resistance to tyranny is obedience to God. And this is nothing less than tyranny by these people. We are calling for coaches to stand up and to speak out. We will see what happens. But this has a lot to do with the autonomy movement of the major conferences. It has a lot to do with the fact that Southeast Conference teams can maybe be on TV with a shortened format. The hundreds of other teams cannot. We need a separation between what is a TV format and what is an educational format. I think this is the way that we work with this, as we go for an educational format instead of an entertainment format. We have to go to another commercial. We'll be right back. This is Chuck Creasy and American Tennis.
Warning. Orthopedic surgeons are seeing an increase in overuse injuries when young athletes perform the same repetitive stressful motions over and over. Pitching, tennis, weight training, even long swimming workouts can cause overuse trauma that may require surgery. If your kids play and train hard, visit orthoinfo.org or stopsportsinjuries.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine.
Clean heart, how good are those lines? And I do not, what do you say the opposite of that would be? You know, dirty heart and clean hands. I mean, we really need to stop and think about that one. You know, dirty hands and a clean heart. Think about the opposite of what that means and where we're going. And the whole college atmosphere and the whole situation is a different arena. The best educational experience in the world happens through collegiate athletics. Tennis has always been the best educational process in the world. There's no sport like it. I've done some seminars recently, and coaches say they have a hard time of getting their youngsters into tennis. They'll say it's sort of a sissy sport or sport that doesn't really challenge them enough. And then they say that after a year or two of coaching, they're going, my golly, I've never seen a harder sport. It is a sport that on the surface does not have much of a appeal to certain athletes who would look at themselves as more macho or something. But once people get into it, there really, really is nothing better. We have a situation in collegiate athletics that in collegiate tennis right now, where our politics is getting in the way of the process of the learning activities. Tennis in 1980s, folks, I remember asking my athletic director, I go, Well, listen, what will happen to tennis? Would they ever drop the sport? And he went on to say there's no way tennis would be about the last sport they drop for three big reasons. Number one, you get the most payoff for the least amount of money. You don't have to have that many athletes. The injuries are not that severe, so you don't have to worry about great injuries. He said you get the most visibility in all the sports, and all of the sports complexes are already built. They're already built. So, and then on top of that, tennis players are your best students. And on top of that, when the tennis players come back from being out in the arena, what happens is that they usually are doctors, lawyers, in a financial status that is really going to be big benefit for many, many years to come as alumni. And where we're at right now has nothing less to do than not addressing of many, many issues as they've come down the pike. It's so very, very disheartening. But where we're at right now, folks, is we're in limbo again with college tennis. The ITA convention, although I did not go, I realized that it was sort of a loaded deck automatically. They brought in the people they wanted to. They had their own crowds. They have their board that is not elected, and they basically have pushed through new legislation that they will now push to the NCAA cabinet, and we might be forced to play the Bullwinkle format or the format that is really a downgrade from the educational traditional format. So that's what's going on with that. It's just so very, very disheartening. I'm hoping Coach DeAndre comes back on. I wanted him to comment on a sports issue that's come to the papers in the state of South Carolina. One of the state senators is bringing to the floor something that said it's time to pay athletes. It's very, very sad. Those people who are college athletes are already getting, if they're from out of state at most schools, they're getting between $35,000 and $65,000 or $70,000 a year in scholarship aid. Now, how in the world could anyone not see that $65,000 or $70,000 doesn't equate up to $3,000 or $4,000 a week that they're in school? Most athletes, if you're getting $60,000, they don't have to play 20 weeks of the sport a year, if that much. And you do the math, it's $3,000 a week, or how much per day would that be? My golly, $600 a day? $600 a day to play college athletics? But it's a difference between value and price. Price, everyone knows the price for everything, then the value of very, very, very little, to quote the great Bill Timm on that. But the value of the education is not looked at and is not held in high esteem anymore. We really, really have a need for serious leadership, and we need for those people who have the voices, the heart, the know-how to step up and step forward. We always say at American Tennis, address the issues, not the people. Stay professional. You can say anything you want to say. We need you to step up and to speak out. All that it takes for evil to prosper is for good men, good people to do nothing. If we do nothing, we will create a police state. We will create a situation where bad people get their way because they talk louder and they are more adamant at first. Most of the time, you are sitting back and saying, well, our leaders are good people, and we need to just see where they're up to. And for the most part, yes, you're right. But when evil is there, you have a duty to stand up and speak out. If you don't, we get what we deserve. And your job is to stand up and to speak out and to speak what is true. And there is a truth and there is a non-truth going on now in the ranks of college tennis, but in many, many of the top-down management programs that are going on with United States Tennis. We need to make sure that we continue to use our First Amendment rights. If you stay professional, if you stay with the just right to do in addressing the issue, do not ever get personal. Do not get personal. As much as you want to. I was telling my children a couple weeks ago that when you get personal, it feels good for about 20 seconds or 20, 30 seconds, but then you regret it for 20, 30 weeks because it makes your heart feel bad and it makes you feel like you've hurt someone else. It's so, so important, though, that we step up and speak about what the truth is. Clichés, facts, opinions, feelings, and needs. Those levels, clichés and facts, are those things that we use in our bumper car environment where we step up and we'll talk about little things. How you doing? Fine. What's going on? Not much. The weather's nice. That's good. Facts are things a little bit deeper. Opinions, now we've got to talk. If you're against the opinions that we're talking about here on American Tennis, call in and we'll talk about them. But you have a duty to be honest and to speak opinions in a good way. And you must do it so that you agree to disagree. This is how friendships are made, through differing points of opinions. You then, clichés, facts, opinions, feelings are much deeper than that, and needs are where ultimately this is the part that keeps us alive and keeps us going. One last little thing here, and I didn't get Coach DeAndre back. We're going to have him again, though. But one other little thing is that I talked to a group of coaches this past weekend, and I told them, everybody works for six different reasons: financial reward, material reward, association, being part of something, appreciation, just a pat on the back, self-improvement, and service to others. And I asked the coaches, I said, why do you guys work? Is it financial reward or material reward? And they just busted out laughing. And then I said, appreciation, and absolutely, without a doubt. Then I said, appreciation, association, being part of something that's bigger than yourself, the game of tennis. They said, absolutely. Self-improvement, somewhat. In the end, though, it's mainly the biggest reason you work as a teacher and you work as a coach is a service to others, because it's the most noble thing that you could ever do. Folks, we need you out there. Stand up, speak out, say those things that need to be said. We need to always hold our head up and understand we are in the United States of America. We are not a socialist country from Europe or somewhere else. We are so far ahead of that because we know what freedom is. Let's not forget the freedoms that we have. Let's not forget that in the United States we have our First Amendment rights.
Made in America. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
Chuck Creasy, and reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. Stand up, speak out, stay strong, do those things that don't get credit now but will for the long term. See you next week on American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.